episode 74 of the Payers and Players podcast. My name's Robert. I'm here with Scott, and we've got another exciting guest. Scott, why don't you introduce us to today's guest?
Yeah, we have Dalton Thieneman from Cracked Rackets. This is exciting for us. We've sort of known Dalton from the beginning of Cracked Rackets. We both got into this medium around the same time, and so we sort of followed them from the start, and it's been just awesome to watch them grow and do things that never thought that we'd see. So happy to have this conversation with Dalton. Dalton, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I know this is a long time coming. I've been a big fan of what you've been doing the last couple years, and Scott in particular. I know you and Luke have played a couple of the events, or Luke has played a couple of our events dating back to like the COVID event for the Cracked Rackets Open. And then we've seen you out at Cincinnati, and then obviously with the Louisville ties. But thank you for all you're doing for the sport. I know, even my mom listens to you guys as a tennis parent, and just seeing how we can improve our sport. So thank you for all you do.
Appreciate that. Well, why don't you give us the backstory on Cracked Rackets? How you guys got started, and where you're going next?
Yeah, for sure. So I think the broader context is pretty important. That come from a big tennis family, but also a big sports family, and I'm the oldest of four boys. So growing up, we played every sport in the book. But 2017, we start Cracked Rackets. Basically with the understanding that, the tennis media landscape was not covering tennis players as we thought that they deserved to be covered outside of, the top five players on the ATP and WTA tour. So the top 100 all the way down to college junior tennis just wasn't getting the coverage that we thought, the tennis community and tennis fans, deserved, and even the players themselves. So, as a big sports guy, looking at basketball, baseball, football, the LeBron Jameses of the world kind of come up, you start seeing highlights of them at, sixth, seventh, eighth grade. And you not only know everything about them on the court, but then off it as well. And, at the time when we started Cracked Rackets in 2017, I was playing in an old men's USTA league, playing 4-5 and just grabbing a beer after the matches, talking about the contingent of American players right now that are dominating. Taylor Fritz, Tommy Paul, Riley Opelka, Tiafo, and then Blumberg and Chris Eubanks. Not only were they competing in junior Grand Slams, but they were winning them. And, some of my tennis buddies were following them with the expectation that they could potentially bring us back to the glory days of American tennis from the 80s and 90s. And, not only could we not find a just article covering them or a podcast, but we're trying to follow them as they, are winning Grand Slams. And we can't even get updated scores on the ITF website. So with that, we kind of took matters into our own hands, started Cracked Rackets as a written blog, and found out pretty quickly that even back in 2017, it's a lot worse today, but people have the attention spans of squirrels. So they needed something a little more engaging than just written articles. So we pivoted pretty quickly to audio and video content. And I think, Scott, we may have talked about this in Cincinnati in 2017 or 2018 even. But from there, we kind of continued on, and the broadcast part of the business was a natural progression for us and is a large part of what we do today. But really, the inception was looking around our sport, being avid tennis fans and fanatically passionate about tennis, and just being disappointed in the coverage and trying to do something about it.
Yeah, we definitely join you in that disappointment, but I think you guys have figured out the engagement, because y'all are one of the most entertaining podcasts out there, regardless of the subject, but for sure one of the most entertaining tennis podcasts that I listen to. And Scott would probably agree.
Yeah, absolutely. And so how did that evolve? I know that you started doing some podcasts, and then you brought in Gruskin and his crew. So tell me how that partnership formed.
Yeah. So, kind of like we were talking on the pre-call, I'm not a guy that sits on the couch. So if there's, an idea that I come up with, or someone in our circle comes up with, I'm typically the one that runs with it. But That being said, this thing, you know, doesn't have its engine without, you know, us having a lot of smart guys on the team. So, you know, Daniel Westhoff is my best friend from high school. He's a former aerospace engineer. And so had that kind of engineer background and the ability to, you know, make kind of an idea reality. So he's kind of the technical brains behind the operation, is able to put together a website, is able to produce podcasts, both audio and video. And then also here in recent years has, you know, engineered himself from scratch, the remote broadcast software that we use on our cross court cast, which is kind of similar to NFL Red Zone. So we've got Westhoff in the mix right out of the gate. And then Gruskin comes along pretty soon thereafter. So I think we started, you know, formally in August of 2017. Gruskin, you know, here's one of the podcasts where at that point I'm hosting them. And, you know, now I'm self-aware enough to know that he is much better suited for that host and editor in chief role, kind of running our content. But he DM'd us on Twitter, basically was like, hey, you know, love what you guys are doing. Love where you're headed. I'm running a podcast out of my dorm at Michigan, and, you know, take a listen. And then once you have, let's schedule a call and see if we could work together in some capacity. And it only took me, you know, probably 5 to 10 minutes into the first podcast that I listened to with he and Max Rothman, who was with us there in the early stages of Cracked Rackets. And they're literally talking about what guys and gals on tour would have the fastest 40 times and who would score the best on the ACT. And I'm like, oh, these guys think outside the box. This is a type of kind of storytelling. And again, you know, the reoccurring theme here is that just fanatically passionate enthusiasm about tennis that, you know, we were looking for. So he came into the fold after, you know, a conversation. I actually don't tell my mom, but was working full time at the State House and then doing law school at night. So I skipped out on one of my law school classes to take that call that ended up being an hour and a half plus with Gruskin. And I'm glad that I took that call because, you know, the three of us kind of have, you know, different parts of the brain that we have squared away to make this thing go.
Hey, so I got to ask this. I know Scott's got a follow up, but so of the whole crew, which one of y'all has the fastest 40 time and who has the highest ACT?
I would argue that I'm the fastest. I'm sure Gruskin would push back, but then it's going to be a hell of a competition. I'm not going to have the highest ACT. I can guarantee you that. It'll be Westhoff or Gruskin, and I'd love to see that actually. So
love it. if Westhoff's the aerospace engineer, I'd expect him to have the brains there. So that would be my bet.
He is, but Gruskin has the photographic memory, so it'd be tough.
Well, you got to remember, some of those kids I used to teach, the smartest ones sometimes don't always do the best on the ACT because they're looking at A and going, well, that could be right, and here's why. And then they look at B and they go, well, that could be right, too. So sometimes your out-of-box thinkers struggle on something like the ACT.
Well, Robert, I appreciate you making that counter argument for me. I truly do. So I'll take that as a compliment.
Yes, sir.
So, you know, that's a great backstory and everything. And just, so I'm curious, you know, you guys are very popular with junior tennis and, you know, say all the kids and, you know, when I go to tournaments, you know, we hear Cracked Rackets, they know who you guys are, but I'm curious, you guys have any plans to cover any junior tennis? I know you guys have done a lot with, you know, the challenger level, the college level, but anything looking for, you know, some of the higher level junior tournaments?
Yeah, we would love to, and have actually, we were contracted to do Kalamazoo during COVID, and the same thing with Little Mo, Easter Bowl, and Eddie Herr. So, you know, most of those tournaments, at least, you know, the last few years have incorporated streaming, so we at least have that kind of coverage. But we were supposed to get into junior tennis back then, and then, of course, COVID shut everything down. And since then, we've tried to revisit it and just, you know, budgets seem to be a little tighter the last 12 to 18 months than they were pre-COVID. But yeah, we would love to. And we are in talks right now about Kalamazoo, but we would love nothing more than, you know, to add those events, and especially the higher level events, and then, you know, the junior slams into our rotation. and we have plans to do so. So.
Yeah, my son played Little Mo, and I can tell you, and I know Luke did too, Scott's son. The idea of you guys calling a Little Mo match would just be fantastic. I mean, that they've got to make that happen, because that would be awesome.
Yeah, and you know, we would love to do it too. And I know, you know, as Scott alluded to in the intro, we run anywhere from 10 to 15 junior and then, you know, ITA summer circuit events each year. And the last, I think, 3 years, we've ran the national level one indoors for boys 12s. And the first 2 years, we actually did play-by-play commentary for the quarterfinals on. And this is so I haven't talked about this a lot because I haven't gotten the question, but we got more views on those two broadcasts than we typically do even an individual college match. So I think, you know, with junior tennis, you have family members who are unable to travel or coaches or what have you that would love to tune in to that kind of thing. And, you know, I think, you know, we obviously have the infrastructure to do it. And I, that's something that we plan on doing more and more of. I wish that we could, you know, even do all of indoors moving forward here. So if you guys know anybody at the USTA or any other tennis powers that be, feel free to refer us.
Well, you know that I don't know anybody, so you know we've already tried that route and that didn't work. So don't look to me.
Well, yeah, that I think that's something that can definitely happen. But that's really interesting. I guarantee you it was popular. I'm not surprised your viewership was really high, because a professional broadcast of a especially Little Mo an 8-year-old match or a 9-year-old match would be fantastic to watch.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we got thousands of views on those broadcasts, which is a big, I mean, for, you know, a sponsor or a tennis brand out there that's looking to potentially advertise. I mean, that's right in their wheelhouse too, right? With those kind of eyeballs. But for Little Mo, we actually know a board member for the Little Mo tournament. So we do have an inroad there and are still trying to make that happen here. At the end of the year. So hopefully that happens, because I think just like anything else that we've done since 2017, you know, tennis is a little tougher to break into because they already have their processes in place, or maybe it's a little tougher and unwilling to change in certain ways. But once we get in, you know, just like the college sphere, once we started doing indoor nationals for the ITA, and kind of proved concept and showed them what we could do. You know, now we're celebrating our 5th annual year doing that with them. And then, you know, this year we did 700 college tennis matches. Last year, I think we did 150. And then, you know, obviously, you know, I think this is going to be published after NCAAs, but I'm excited for everyone to see what we have, you know, planned for NCAAs as well. So, feel like once you get in the door, if it's junior tennis, college tennis, professional tennis, once you kind of prove concept and show what you can do, you know, then other events and other tournaments are willing to bring you into the fold.
Yeah, and like I said, just from our perspective and the tennis parents out there, we love what you guys are doing so much. And like, you guys don't just focus on the highest levels. And I've seen you guys run level 5 tournaments with the same passion that you run the national indoors. So your guys is you and Hannah are just great when you guys are around, and you make the tournament so fun. And you know, the kids love anytime there's a Crack Rackets tournament, you know, it's always one that we want to put on the list. So keep doing what you're doing. We love it.
Yeah. Is the website that y'all, I mean, is your website where people can get information on all of those things that y'all are doing?
Yeah. So yeah, www.crackrackets.com is a good platform. So we'll have our summer and fall events up there here the next couple of weeks. But yeah, follow us on social media as well at Cracked Rackets, and it's RACQUETS. We typically do a pretty good job of posting at least a handful of times every single day. So any of our upcoming events are on there as well.
Yeah, and like I say, I remember your summer tournament a couple of years ago, the Crack Rackets Open, you know, it was one of those tournaments. I think it was during COVID, so there wasn't a lot going on, but you guys were able to put together a tournament that had, you know, Nishesh Basaravetti. Remember, he played Milan Hurrian, and you had Ozan and Preston Stearns. I mean, really high level players, a great tournament. And, you know, that was an awesome event during the summer when there wasn't much else out there.
Yeah. And really that was the first year. And Scott, I think you and I have talked about this offline, but that was the first year that we got into tournaments. We had no plan internally to get into the event space other than, Top Notch Management is a really good partner of ours. So they do, you know, they're a sports agency, but they also have a couple challengers in the Midwest. So we've helped them out on some event management and then hosting and that kind of thing, but never had planned to get into junior and college tournaments. And at that point, no one else was running tournaments because of the risk, or, you know, people didn't want to get out, or they didn't think that there'd be a demand. So the USTA kind of approached us and said, hey, you know, we know that you're a group of young guys that have a lot of energy and maybe willing to do this. And that was the first time that we held an event. And from there, you know, we started, actually that summer, we held events in Indianapolis, Cincinnati, Lexington, and Miami. So we kind of branched out, showed what we could do. And I just think, you know, in tennis, kind of like I was talking about earlier, things have always been done a certain way, and it's maybe convenient and easy to do it that way. And events are, you know, right in that wheelhouse where, you know, certain groups always have held an event this way, and it's the same old thing. And you guys know this more than most, traveling all over the country like you have. You're spending a lot of time and money investing in, you know, your son or daughter going and playing all these USTA or UTR events. So you kind of want, you know, a little more bang for your buck or a little innovation, you know, for events. And so we came in really not knowing any better and just tried to bring some fun and more lighthearted spirit into the fold.
Yeah, excellent. So let me ask you, you know, when you started Cracked Rackets, I mean, I'm sure maybe you didn't have huge designs on how big it was going to be or something like that. But what's something that's happened as a result of Cracked Rackets that you never dreamed would have happened?
Can you repeat that question?
Yes. I'm just trying to say, you know, so like, you know, you start Cracked Rackets and maybe you're not thinking that big or how big it can be, but what I'm curious, what has happened? What's something that you guys have done or been part of that you never thought you would have been a part of when you got into this?
Yeah. I never thought that it would become a viable business where I potentially could leave my job as an attorney to pursue it. There's like no way in the world that we were thinking that way back then. We were just, like I said, a bunch of fanatically passionate tennis fans who thought the sport deserved more coverage and then just started down that path. But to answer your question, what has brought us into this being a legitimate business? Obviously the podcast, you know, really started to take off in 2018, and it's not like we went out and got outside investment or, you know, took private equity dollars or anything like that. It's just been an organic grassroots word of mouth, kind of snowball effect here where, you know, especially in the age of social media and podcasts, like, things are a little more accessible than they might have been 10 years ago if we were to have started it then. So we've been kind of lucky from a timing perspective, because I think we did get in pretty early into the podcast game for tennis, because there just weren't a lot of tennis podcasts out there. And I know you guys started around the same time too. But I think it just kind of we at that time, 2017 and still today, you know, we're like, oh, are we the only ones that are watching the Challenger feed and watching college tennis and following junior results and just anything outside of maybe like the semifinals of slams? And I think we kind of proved that there are people that are like-minded or similar to us that just are obsessed with tennis. So I think that's why we are here today. But again, I can't, you know, it can't be understated how intelligent of, you know, a team that we have here. You know, Westhoff being a former aerospace engineer, Gruskin could have went to any law school in the country and pursued, you know, that. But we're just, yeah, a bunch of guys that love tennis and, you know, can make things happen and don't just talk about, you know, ideas or, oh, this would be cool to do. we act on them. So I think that's the biggest game changer for us and why we're at this point.
Always more fun to chase your passion than it is to work for somebody else or do a job that you don't really enjoy. So that's exciting that y'all did that. And then it worked out that it could be a living for you, not just a hobby.
Yeah, for sure. And it's, well, and I have to tell this story because I think, you know, it that kind of sparks my memory. So 2017, I you know, we started as a blog, like I said, but the podcasts were really like came and materialized soon thereafter. But 2018 was the first, you know, major event that we went to as a, you know, credentialed media, if you will. And we went to the ITA Indoor Nationals in Chicago. And no one was there, no other member of the media. We didn't see sponsors there. We're walking up to the JJ Wolfs of the world and asking for an interview. And he's shocked that someone would be asking for an interview. And, you know, I told my dad after we, you know, we were heading home and he's like, oh, man, you guys either are going to go bankrupt and this isn't going to be a thing since 6 months from now, like this is going to fizzle out, or you struck gold. Because there's, you know, no one else in the space and it's ripe for the taking here. So, you know, I think at that point we kind of knew we really needed to give this a go, not only from a written and podcast coverage standpoint, but the broadcast component, you know, needed to be a crucial part of the business. So with Westhoff's know-how and just, you know, all right, what we want to get into the broadcast side of things, let's do it. And then, you know, Gruskin's, you know, his ability to talk to a wall, but also his photographic memory and how much he follows tennis. I think, you know, we kind of had the perfect group of people at the perfect time to go after this.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we sort of saw the same thing. You know, I think the first time I met Gruskin was at the 2018 National Championships where, you know, we'd went, it was at Wake Forest. And, you know, for us, it's not too bad of a drive to get there. So we went and we just, you know, asked for, you know, media passes. Approved on the spot, you know, there was like, it was like you said, there's nobody else there. So of course they'll give them to anybody. So they gave them to us. And, yeah, but you know, then you take a look at what, how the NCAAs were at, in Champaign last year, there's a lot of media there. It was like, it was amazing how much in the 3 or 4 years since then that this has grown. And I think you guys are a big part of that, is bringing attention to it, other people getting into, you know, the reporting on it, because it wasn't there before. And so, you know, I think it's just going to continue to grow. And, you know, we're getting spaced out because there's so many more people in the field now.
Scott, tell the story about the, I think it was a challenger you went to and you sat in the bleachers, and I don't remember who was playing. But you said you sat in the bleachers and it was literally just you and the coach there.
Oh, yeah. It was, this was, you know, again, this is before, you know, we did the podcast, but just sort of just getting into tennis. There was Lexington Challenger, you know, Jared Donaldson. I think he just made the finals of Kalamazoo. Stefan Kozlov, he just made the finals of Wimbledon. They were both playing there. So I was like, oh, I should go over there. And, you know, they're playing in Lexington. I should go watch this. So we get there. And Jared Donaldson's playing somebody, and literally it's not even his coach. It was me, Stefan Kozlov, my son, and a friend. Four people. It was it. And it was unbelievable. So, you know.
I mean, and this is the equivalent of like AAA baseball, and there's four people there. Right, and your crew made up three of the four.
right, exactly. So, yeah, it was like it was like watching an Oakland A's game, I guess. So,
well, and this is, to me, this is what I love about Crack Racket, the Crack Racket podcast is, and we've talked about it a lot, the top five players, and Dalton, you alluded to it at the beginning, the top five players in tennis get a lot of attention. But when you get beyond those top five players, people don't know who they are. I mean, and I think in the game, we need to get to a point where you walk into Walmart and you mention whoever number 40 is, and they at least have heard the name on ESPN at some point, right? But they just, once you get past that top five, really, and I'll be honest with you, in Walmart, if you get past Roger Federer, that's about all they know.
Yeah.
So I love what y'all are doing, because every level of the game is so unique and needs to be highlighted in some way.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think, And for individual sports, I think for golf, I think golf's doing a better job now. But for tennis in particular, I think we do a horrible job, even today in 2023, of character development and storytelling and, you know, seeing how difficult it is for these players. I mean, we know this, the three of us, you know, being in the sport and following it so closely. But the fact that, you know, you get to the U.S. Open and certain commentators will say, you know, this guy or this guy, like, they're a journeyman, and like, it's and they're like 35, 40 in the world. It's like, no, that, like, what are you talking about? Like, they've been top 50 and they, you know, made the semifinal, or they just won, you know, this 250 event a couple months ago. I just think collectively as the media and even, you know, tennis Twitter, I think has grown pretty significantly the last couple of years too. But I think, you know, we should be doing a better job of storytelling and getting the word out about these players, and not just necessarily what they're doing and achieving on the court, or, you know, the workouts they're putting in, or what diet, or, you know, they're doing this regiment, but even off the field and off the court, like, here's their interests, here's their hobbies. And that's something that we aim to do more of moving forward. Like, that's a big priority of ours moving forward.
Sure.
Not only in the pros, college, but juniors too.
The fans want a personal relationship with the players they watch. The casual fan. I mean, we're all going to watch it no matter what. But the casual fan, and this is what I like about the Netflix stuff that they're doing.
Yep.
I've got people talking to me about tennis who have never watched a tennis match, but they're interested in this guy, this Kyrgios guy. He's kind of interesting. You know, they'll say to me, and I'm going, how do you even know who he is? And they're like, oh, the Netflix documentary, right? So to your point, the storytelling, the interpersonal relationship, and the me growing a relationship with the character, even though it's one way, is a big part of people having interest in each of the individual sports. Documentaries on ESPN like 30 for 30 are proof of that. HBO doing Hard Knocks, also proof of that for the NFL. So I love that y'all are focused on that.
Yeah, I think Breakpoint is going to be huge, and I'm really, really excited about this next batch of episodes, because I've heard that it's actually even better than the first. But so we put together a podcast. It's called the Inside Out Podcast, and we recapped all of Breakpoint. And Taylor Fritz actually was, you know, he came on the show and gave us kind of an inside look behind the curtain. But I think, you know, series like that are super important to tennis. And like you said, for casual fans, maybe they're not going to be, you know, the biggest tennis fans watching the Challenger circuit like we will. But if they can start following and getting to know some of the personalities and you know, what they're like and who they are as a human being, I think our sport will be better for it. But Scott, to your point, not to kind of hijack the conversation, but you mentioned that NCAAs the last 2 years has, you know, grown, and in Champaign, there were a ton of media and fans there. I think it's also because of some of the personalities that we've seen come through, and not only in college and done really well there, but broken in and transcended into professional tennis. I mean, not only JJ Wolf and Ben Shelton, but you've got Peyton Stearns and Emma Navarro, who are still crushing it this year. But, you know, champions and did really well in the college sphere, but also their game and personalities have really translated to the tour. So I think that's why you're seeing it more than just us broadcasting and providing coverage. I think that's important too, but you're seeing some big personalities come through too.
Yeah, definitely. You're seeing a lot of success from the college players in the challengers and going on further than that. And I think you're right. You know, if I think back to 2018, some of the top players there, they weren't the same caliber or the same name recognition as some of the ones you just mentioned. And, you know, and also, you know, it's just, I just think that, you know, we've seen a lot of growth in the last 4 or 5 years in awareness of college tennis through, you know, being on, you know, your what you guys do with your, you know, conference affiliations, as well as, you know, some coverage on Tennis Channel as well. So hopefully that continues to grow.
Yeah, 100%. My biggest thing, and I know this is going to be published after NCAA, so hopefully you watched and saw our collaboration with the Bryan brothers, who were inducted in the Hall of Fame for the ITA Hall of Fame. But their dad, and them too, but Wayne Bryan, their dad, who was their coach, is super passionate about college tennis and how it gave the Bryan brothers their start at Stanford and kind of, kick them into high gear going into the pros. But he has a huge initiative out in California about bringing just junior players and kids in general who are interested in sports to a college tennis match to show them, hey, like, you know, the, you know, junior circuit, USTA is fine, but if you go to a college tennis match and see how exciting the dual match atmosphere is, you've got screaming and yelling, you've got some controversy. There really is nothing like college tennis. And I think it's the best kept secret in sports, and I'll die on that hill every day. So I just think, you know, getting even people in your circles out to a college tennis match who may not have a reason to go if they don't have a kid playing or they have no attachment to the university in their community, bring your tennis buddies out to a college tennis match because they will not be disappointed.
100% agree. So let me ask, what do you have planned for the summer? I know you mentioned some of the ITA summer tournaments, but anything internally in Cracked Rackets, you have some plans for any future growth, any new venues?
Yeah, so I kind of, that's a great question, and thanks for asking. I think, I talked about it a little bit earlier, but we're really bolstering our broadcast side of the business. Grew from 150 college tennis matches last year, broadcasted to 700 this year, and then some with NCAAs. But we've also now have the broadcast rights to 30 professional tennis events. So most of those are future level events here in the States, and then a handful of challengers as well. But yeah, we're going to get pretty aggressive the next, not just this year, but the next 3 to 5 years as some of these bigger event contracts come up from a broadcast right perspective. We really want to get into, I think we're based in Indianapolis, if, for those who don't know that. So Peyton Manning and the Manning cast, he and Eli and Cooper have done a good job building that out and kind of showing, sports media and fans how that can be. And the same thing with Pat McAfee in college football, just that alternative cast model is super intriguing to us internally at CR, and how we can maybe incorporate that and kind of take the roadmap that they've shown in the NFL and college football and doing that in tennis. When we've had these conversations lately, people push back and they're like, you can do this in juniors and college. Obviously that makes sense. Maybe even the lower levels of professional tennis. But we have some concrete plans to do so, in 250s, 500, thousands, and even slams. So that's kind of our game plan moving forward here.
Very cool. Very cool. And you'll be at Cincinnati this year?
Yeah, 100%. I'm curious how it's going to be with Ben Navarro, the new owner, and right. Bob Moran and his group being involved, because I think they've got some creative ideas already planned and the money and resources to make those happen.
And do you think they're going to, is there any plans for them to move away from Cincinnati? I know that Ben's got some ties to Charleston, but do you think that Cincinnati's here to stay?
I know we're just amongst friends here, so I'm pretty confident to share this. I from everything that I've heard, they are not planning to move that. I know there were a lot of rumblings whenever the acquisition happened there for the tournament, but I've heard that at least for the in the short term, they have no plans to move that out of Cincinnati.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to change the subject here. Y'all are in serious stuff. So Dalton, I asked ChatGPT what I should ask you, and actually, they know that you're part of the Cracked Rackets podcast. And here's what they gave me. It's ridiculous. If you were to host a tennis-themed dinner party and can invite any three players from history, who would you invite, but your goal is for it to end in a fist fight?
Oh, that's the best question. I think we've been replaced by ChatGPT.
I couldn't even begin to like come up with a question like that, but I love that one.
So well, I couldn't have come up with it, so it had to be ChatGPT. Go ahead.
Oh, so it's any player in history at a dinner party. So I'm inviting three players to a dinner party where it will most likely end up in a fist fight.
It's got to become the Jerry Springer Show.
Oh my gosh. Well, yeah, that's a tough one. I would have to say, you know, Johnny Mack in his prime. I can't not include him, obviously. And then, you know, obviously Nick Kyrgios is in the mix.
Yeah, I like it.
And I'm trying to think, I want to throw a collegiate player in, but I also want to, you know, bring a fiery personality in on the ladies' side. Geez, this is a good one.
Well, you know, it has to be Tsitsipas, because I think everybody wants to punch Tsitsipas.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to see. I know he wants to, you know, hit Carlos because he's just bitter about it at this point. I don't know. I mean, BJK or Chrissy Everett, I know would be, you know, hilarious. And I think would probably get into a fight of some kind there. Geez, I'll go with Chrissy. Just the three of them can kind of duke it out.
I love it.
Well, that's a great transition. We'll wrap things up here with our fast feed. We'll ask you some questions. You can give us whatever comes to mind. It doesn't have to be a long answer. But start with, give us a hot take.
Oh, well, so I know this, well, one of our interns actually tweeted this out and then shared it on Instagram, which I loved it because it got the interaction and engagement we wanted, but ball kids should be responsible for the towels on court.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about that, but it does slow things down.
I think it speeds things up.
No. I meant with the players having to go get their own towels.
Yeah.
See, I like the idea of the ball kids. Just, I want, for a flipped reason, I want the ball kids to get the experience.
Yeah, more interaction. That's my, everyone's like, oh, it's so demeaning and like the disgusting towels. I totally get that. But if, like, I've been a ball kid, you know, if you're 8, 9, 10 years old, you are just love that you're up close and personal, you're on the court, like you're not even thinking about all that. So I mean, if you're concerned about the hygienic, you know, element, like, you know, get him some hand sanitizer, that's fine.
The thing I would add to it is ball kids should actually be kids. So then it's not demeaning because it's 10-year-olds out there and they are happy to do it.
Right? Yep, totally agree.
All right, so question two, your favorite moment at the Western and Southern Open.
And there's only one right answer, Dalton.
Oh yeah, this is easy for me because I was there, Scott. I believe you were there late night. It's when JJ qualified. I think this was like 18 or maybe it was 19, but he qualified at like midnight on stadium court, and it was super. It may have been even later than that, but qualified in front of the hometown. You know, just knowing JJ and following him, junior career, and then at Ohio State. To do that in Cincinnati was super special.
Yeah, what were you thinking, Scott? That's not the right answer, but
I'm not. What's the right?
What's the right answer, Scott?
Well, Dalton, you were there with me. We were in the stairwell outside the media room, and
that was my second answer.
Yeah, exactly. And Federer walks out and walks right in between us and gives us the head nod. So that had to be your favorite moment.
That's definitely like top three. I'd say another top three was when Gruskin asked Federer who was the better version of Federer. This is his first press conference that I ever was, you know, a witness of. But he asked Fed if who was the better version of Federer, Federer with the ponytail or at that point, which was like 2018, 2019. And Fed was literally speechless. It was hilarious.
That was a ChatGPT question also.
Yeah, we'll blame it on that. Yeah.
Okay. Give us your favorite tennis book and documentary.
Oh my gosh, that is tough. I'm trying to think. Yeah, because from a book standpoint, I'm not going to say what you think. So I don't know if you guys know Bo Trace, but he's the man. He formerly coached Brandon Nakashima. Yeah. And he's coached a lot of big names on tour, but he's super underrated as a coach.
Yeah, he's been on the podcast.
Okay. So we'll go back and check out that episode because Bo is one of the best minds in tennis. He's super underrated. But his book, How to Tennis, I think it's Think, Train, and Compete to Your Potential or something like that, is on Amazon, and it is life-changing. Like Presley's read it, my little brother who plays at Northwestern, and even like, you know, me playing low 4-5 tennis is awesome. But then the documentary about I loved Breakpoint. I know a lot of tennis media gave it shit, but I thought it was really good for casual tennis fans, which is why I love it. But the Fed Nadal doc is easily my best and my favorite. I'm trying to remember what that was called.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, if tennis media is giving it a hard time, it's probably good.
Yeah. Totally agree. It's Strokes of Genius is the name of the Fed Nadal doc. From like 08 or something.
Right. It was a 08 match.
Yep. Three more questions. Netflix recommendation. Something on Netflix.
Oh my gosh. Well, as I said earlier, I'm not a couch guy. So watching stuff on Netflix, I'm more like Succession on HBO as well.
Okay. Yeah,
that'll work.
Yeah.
So we need to change this to streaming service recommendation.
We're in the era of streaming wars. Yeah, I got to give HBO a shout out.
Exactly. All right. What is something that you believed before you started Cracked Rackets that you no longer believe?
Oh, I mean, this is for like anything. Maybe like people individually and groups, entities, like things that you or people that you may have looked up to before. Aren't as they always seem. So if you have a big idea and it's something that you're super passionate about, pursue it relentlessly. And you also have to work your ass off to make it a reality. But, you know, those people that you think are really making a huge impact, 9 times out of 10, unfortunately, aren't making the impact that you think that they are or should be in the roles that they're in.
Yeah. All right. Well, the last one, and as Scott would say, there's only one right answer to this one. What's the best thing about a fresh can of tennis balls?
The smell.
I don't know. Does anybody else say anything other than the smell?
Well, so I love that question. Whenever I only hosted like, you know, 4 or 5 episodes of the Cracked Interviews podcast, day one of Cracked Rackets, or the first, you know, couple months. But that was one of my questions back in the day. So I love that question. But it's definitely the smell.
I'm sure that's why Scott put it in here. He's very good at those type of questions. Love
that. That was an ode to you.
Love that.
So speaking of which, though, I can't find the old podcast anymore. I went out to look for your and here's some trivia. Who was your first podcast guest?
Oh, that's easy. That is easy. It's Chris Eubanks was number one. Will Blumberg was number two. Will actually now does some broadcasts with us and is about to launch a podcast under our umbrella. I called him Will Bloomberg.
Well, I guarantee you he wishes the money of the Bloomberg family would follow.
Yeah. For sure.
Perfect. Well, Dalton, it's been awesome. I know you got to go, but we appreciate your time. Appreciate everything you guys do at Cracked Rackets and look forward to working with you guys in the future.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks so much for having me on. And thanks for all you guys do. It's super important for tennis. We need more people like you that don't just, you know, complain about the current state of affairs in tennis, but do something about it. So thanks for doing something about it and the podcast and the coverage. Truly appreciate it.
Absolutely. And if anybody's out there, go to crackrackets.com, follow all their social media, Facebook, Twitter, everything else. Awesome follows. And we thank you again for being on the show.
Thanks, guys. Talk soon.
All right. See you.